Bob Iacino, Path Trading Partners co-founder and chief market strategist. He's also the Stock Think Tank co-portfolio manager. Bob, let's put this all in context, because we're talking about Russia and oil. Obviously, Russia, the third largest producer globally, it accounts for roughly 12% of global crude production. What do you see as the biggest risk right now as diplomacy tries to take its course, but increasingly feels like it's running out of time?
Well, good morning. I think that the main weapon sort of against the West, other than cyber attacks, which I don't know anything about, so I wouldn't really speak to those, would be the pullback of production that, quite frankly, financially Russia needs. But I think Vladimir Putin as a leader has shown that he's got some tolerance for allowing his populace to suffer in order to achieve his ends. Now, from that perspective, he could cut back on crude oil production at a time when the US and other countries are struggling with inflation. The UK is struggling with record high inflation. I would argue the EU as well, although Christine Lagarde thinks it's transitory. She's one of the last central bankers to use that type of phraseology in terms of inflation. And if you were to bump up crude oil prices to the levels that Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, I believe JP Morgan's in that crew, that have said we could have an average for 2022 of around $100 to $105 a barrel, depending on who's predicting it, it can go much higher than that if Russia were to do that. Now, I understand that diplomacy is still on the table, and that's a good thing. Crude oil now is pulling back from those highs. Also, U.S. rig counts are above 500 for the first time really since about March or May, between March or May of 2020. But if you look at the amount of time it takes for the U.S. shale producers to produce shale versus the amount of times the prices could collapse, the last time we were at these price levels was about September 17th of 2014. It only took 75 trading sessions for crude oil to get back below $50, which U.S. shale does not want to see. So we have to sustain these price levels before any U.S. production is going to help out with this situation.
Yeah, I mean, let me pick up on that point, because you're right. You know, so much of this discussion has been what Russia can do in terms of sort of weaponizing, as you put it, their grip on oil. I wonder what the risk to the downside is, though. I mean, not that we're anticipating this could all play out in a matter of days, but if in fact there is a resolution, some kind of agreement reached that says, like, any kind of military activity is off the table, what would that mean for oil prices, given how quickly they've risen on the anticipation that there is an invasion that's imminent?
Well, oil markets have a characteristic, and that characteristic basically consists of adjusting to potential supply and demand dynamics. Those are the trends that we see, whether up or down, and then moving sideways within pretty wide ranges, while the supply and demand equation is not settled, but settled within a range. So I think if the temperature were to tone down between Russia and the Ukraine, you're only probably talking about $8 to $10 lower. So that would only put us at about, say, $83 to $85. And then that would likely be the middle to the low end of the range that we would probably stick in as the supply and demand dynamics worked out. You know, we talk of OPEC Plus increasing their production targets. They haven't been able to reach those targets for quite some time. Some analysts estimate that they were 800,000 short of their targets in 2021 for the entire year, 800,000 barrels a day short for the entire year on average. So even though they agreed to increase production, demand is rising, and that demand rise is not expected to slow, especially because we're right around the corner from the summer driving season. So all of this is going to go into that equation. I think if the Russia-Ukraine situation toned back, $80 to $85 a barrel would be the low end of the range we'd be trading in.
Bob, it's Brian Chung here. I want to ask about, amid the uncertainty, what types of political headlines you're watching, because it seems like one obvious one would be Nord Stream 2. We've heard President Biden say that they would suspend Nord Stream 2. It's unclear exactly how he would do that, but obviously Olaf Scholz of Germany heading over to Kiev and then over to Moscow in a last-ditch effort here. I mean, is there anything that could come out of those discussions that would also give you some sort of guide on where oil prices could go based off of those political considerations?
Well, good morning, Brian. There's two things that I want to answer that question with. Number one is the immediate question that came out of Germany when the U.S. started talking about crippling sanctions was, can we get an exemption for energy prices? So I think that would be the first headline I would look at in terms of Russia's ability to bank in U.S. dollars, because as we all know, at least for the time being, energy is priced in U.S. dollars. So I would look for that. I would look for Scholz to come out with a more aggressive request for those exceptions and exemptions to the sanctions. I don't know if he would get it. The second thing I'm actually looking for is headlines with an Iranian nuclear deal, because that could put more Iranian oil on the market and ease these pressures much more. I shouldn't say much more, but within that same range of price easing, that Russia-Ukraine tensions dying down good. So you could potentially get $10 on Russia-Ukraine tensions dying down, and then maybe another $5 to $6 lower on Iranian oil coming back to market in a legal way. It's already been on the market for the most part, and their exports have actually increased, and they're looking for their exports to increase even more. But them to be able to produce in a more internationally legal framework would be a good thing for prices. I'm saying it's a good thing for prices, maybe not other situations politically, but that's not what I look at.
And Bob, finally, what does this all mean for shale producers here in the U.S.? You know, obviously, the threat here, or at least the concern, is that if Russia does cut off any outflows on oil, you know, that could disrupt the global supply, even though if it's just 12%. What does it mean for the producers here, and how quickly would they be able to ramp up?
Well, in a strange way, you know, during the height of the shale boom, we talked about them turning on the spigots and turning off the spigots. And it's just not so simple for shale producers as it is for a traditional driller like Saudi Arabia. You don't just turn these on. You have to ramp up and then you have to ramp back down. And I think that's why we saw this abundance of caution, even though we've seen crude oil go from negative prices all the way up to where they are now. We've seen rig counts in the U.S. just crawl higher, not really rocket higher. That's because, again, there has to be a ramp up. And I think you might start to see that ramp up. Shale producers got burned in, again, how quickly oil prices can drop. I mentioned it was 75 sessions the last time we were here, down to below $50 a barrel. I think they'd like to see a prolonged range above $50 and well above $50 so that the ramp up can at least be paid for, and hopefully they could profit from it as well.